we have Ambassador Tim, who is the UK ambassador to South Sudan. Ambassador, let's look at the installed peace, the implementation of the peace agreement. Now, as a troika country, how do you view the situation in South Sudan in view of the stalled implementation of the peace agreement?
Sebit, I understand why you use the word stalled, and I think a lot about what words to use, what adjectives to use. Slow, certainly.
Slow, okay.
It has most certainly not stopped. And I think what I would say, what I would want to say, is that we are looking forward in every sense of the word. We strongly believe that the opposition and Dr. Machar will return. We hope in the next few days that that process will begin to happen. I'm very conscious. I was talking a few days ago saying exactly the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps even myself thinking that process, those flights would have started by now. But I think we are genuinely very, very close. And that is at a level of planning and detail which simply was not there just a few weeks ago. So we do sense that is happening. So we look forward to that. We must remind ourselves that what we're looking forward to is the real start of the implementation of the peace plan. We are still in a pre-implementation phase. Mm-hmm. From conflict mediation to implementation, in other words, the beginning of actually putting into place what the peace plan says, is a period which has gone on too long and with too much vagueness, and I would argue certainly too many unrelated decisions being taken in the meantime. Some of them have had to be taken because of that length of time. But let's look forward. And the key event we look forward to as this return begins, and begins fairly quickly, we would expect it to move at pace, is the establishment of the transitional government of national unity. And a lot of our thinking, I would say, as the Troika, with our colleagues throughout the international community who care and are concerned with South Sudan, our concern is that the transitional government of national unity should really make a strong start and a new start. It has a very different job from the previous government. It has a job which is implementing the peace agreement. And that is a very, very different role from the normal government. The whole process of the peace agreement is to create this transitional government which leads to elections, and then we have normality in the sense that then we have the elected government which continues its work. Now, the transitional government will need a lot of support. We are all ready for that. We want to support, and we want to support in particular ways. And I would pick out particularly the real rooting of peace in the country, a real review of the 28 States Decree that comes with this, a real enforcement and monitoring of the ceasefire, which is happening at the moment, but we need to be strong and in agreement on that. So peace, the economy, and the problems of the economy come at a faster speed than they are set out in the peace agreement itself. So there are things that the transitional government will need to do immediately in terms of looking at policy, in terms of reaching out to the international financial institutions. We will do our best to make sure that happens, and to make sure that we can respond. We can't guarantee what our response will be, but we are thinking very clearly and very carefully about what it might be. It will depend 100% on the will, the political will of the transitional government to take difficult economic decisions. Mm-hmm. Without that, they will not have the credibility internationally. And then I think initially, the other third element of what we want to see in the very early phases is a new approach on humanitarian affairs, a new approach on human rights. And if I could say just very briefly, on humanitarian affairs, we frequently raise problems of access, access for the United Nations, access for monitoring. Those are real problems. There are sometimes reasons, but access for humanitarian aid is international law. It is compulsory under international law. And we need and expect a fresh approach on that by a transitional government of national unity. On human rights, we have to be careful to be specific what we're talking about. terrible things have happened in the last 2 years. They are documented. There could be argument about detail, but it's quite clear that there have been terrible events. I think the first thing we ask for is acknowledgement. It's acknowledgement that this is by the transitional government, that this is an issue which needs a really careful, a really deep approach, not denial. And in when things go wrong in any country on human rights, the same things always apply. It's the need for acknowledgement, and it's the need for investigation, it's the need for action. I think it's important for us to look forward, and that's what I'm trying to do as I speak to you today. I'm trying to describe how we want to approach the transitional government, because the transitional government will be the key to the future of the peace agreement, and I would argue to the future of the country.
All right.
So that's what we're trying to focus on.
Yes, just of course, the formation of the transitional government of national unity, that will depend when the other party, Dr. Riek Machar, comes to Juba. Now, there was, of course, there is still the issue of his security forces coming here and the transport of his security. There seem to be a missing, let's say, disagreement on whether the forces should come with some organic or heavy weapons, as it is described. And it's like the Troika said, no, we're not bringing your security with heavy weapons, from what we are hearing from the media. Just clarify that for us here in the program as we speak. Well, okay. What is the problem here with bringing the security of Dr. Riek?
Can I first say that I think that there are a whole number of points which need to be organized. My impression is, from what I know of the detailed planning, that most of those points are now solved, that they have achieved solutions. And no doubt there are a few things which remain to be discussed. Yes, you're right. There was a discussion which appeared to suggest that somehow there was a block caused because the Troika or the international community would not do certain things. I would put it the other way around. The job of the opposition returning to Juba, or of South Sudanese troops operating around South Sudan, in the end is for them to do. It has happened frequently, and transport hasn't obviously been a problem for the movement of armed forces within this country. Nevertheless, the Troika absolutely has wanted to contribute to the speeding up of this process because it's an essential part of the peace agreement. And we came up with an offer which remains there on the table, and we would understand that it would be taken up, which is an offer to transport all the initial phase of the SPLMIO coming back to Juba, with the agreement through the JMCC, the Joint Committee of both sides, in other words, agreed by all sides. This is not on behalf of one side. And we would provide, and will provide, and will fund certain things. So that is flights. It is carrying individuals. It is also preparation of the arrangements for when they arrive, which is a significant element. My country, as with my partners, we have identified funding for that, and that's already available. It's in the bank account and can be spent, and already is being spent. The point about weapons is that, you know, one has to be clear that there are some types of weapons which would, and being put in certain places, which would begin to run into the arrangements of the peace agreement. Heavy weapons fall into that category. There is, as we understand it, and it's been explained very carefully, there are certain weapons belonging to units which the units will need. But the basis of our offer is based on the rules of what we can do. And we are not allowed to fund the flights of personnel with anything other than their own personal weapon. So we've explained that very clearly all the way along, that is what we can explain to our taxpayers. That is what our rules say. So if there are other bits of equipment which need to be brought back, then arrangements need to be made, so long as they fit with the peace agreement. There are multiple ways of doing that. But I think it's important to just stand back a little from this, and we have tried to do that, to just say that this process is underway. We all understand that there's a certain nervousness about it, because this is a moment when the two sides are coming together and deciding something very delicate, and that is mm-hmm. complicated. But we do think progress is being made, and all those various details, of course, need to be sorted out. So we are positive. We are certainly continuing that offer of support. And my understanding is, as I say, that offer of support is being taken up, and that will transport all the relevant people back to Juba. There are some arrangements around that which need to be made. Mm-hmm. They need to be compatible with a peace agreement, and that is what I understand is what's being talked about.
Yes, and talking about that, they need to be compatible with the peace agreement. There seems to be a lack of trust between the two sides. Talking to one opposition leader that we spoke to, he did actually mention that if they're not brought here with their weapons, which is term, I don't know if heavy weapons, he said it's more like indirectly or tactically disarming them. I'd like you to respond to that kind of comment.
It's a conversation. I mean, I see the thing in quite simple terms, that the moment when two sides reunite to speak to each other, and particularly when one side has many less people than the other, mm-hmm. clearly there's going to be nervousness. There's going to be the need for reassurance. You can put together a very simple argument about who has more weapons than the other side and who has the advantage. The whole mm-hmm. point about this is a peace agreement, and there are obligations on both sides. And there are most certainly obligations on the government and the SPLA to honour the agreement and to look after the security of those coming back. So a lot of this actually belongs to the government and the SPLA. Now, just to repeat, my impression has been that despite nervousness on a number of issues, that the relationship between professionals, who are after all former comrades and existing comrades, is proceeding. That is taking place. And I think it's not proper for us as outsiders to get involved mm-hmm. in all the detail of the expression of that nervousness between the parties. So we've not been arguing about this. We just continue offering what we want to offer and recognize the point. There are many, many aspects of what is happening, the peace agreement, the movement of troops, which we neither finance nor would dream of financing. Our offer is particularly for the elements which are the key supportive elements for the implementation of the peace agreement and getting the troops back. Dr. Machar returning is key for the setting up of the transitional government. And I know you're going to talk about the economy in a moment, mm-hmm. but
sure.
Every day which passes without a transitional government is creating more economic instability, is a day passing without this new government which needs to come in. So we are all supporting the idea of pressing on.
Yes, as South Sudanese keep the waiting, of course, a lot of people keep waiting as to when these people will come, when the transitional government of national unity will be formed, and of course as when total peace and progress comes to the country. As this waiting continues, where is the biggest problem really right now? You did mention earlier that there is a progress that has been made on the return of the SPLA in opposition to Juba. But where is the biggest problem really from, as you see, in the implementation process of this whole peace agreement?
I think that there's a lot of detailed preparation work still to be done, a lot of detailed work on implementation. A lot of that is ahead of all of us still. And so it is quite a challenge to really prioritize and say, really, what is the most important thing? We're concentrating on the setting up of the TGNU, the transitional government, because that will mean that that discussion will belong to the South Sudanese leaders. And that's absolutely vital, that once they are sitting down around the table, the culture of this discussion can begin to change.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as a personal view, I would argue that needs to happen very quickly. When the leaders are chosen, the members of the Transitional Government of National Unity, they need to establish a culture on the first day of implementation, of taking difficult decisions, This is not a question of going back to the form of government and the pattern of behaviour of government in the past. It is a specific project. So that will need a lot of leadership and it will need a lot of support. So I think that is the priority, because that is the linchpin of all the things which need to be done. Problems, yes, we've had all sorts of problems of delay. The whole mediation process took 2 years, effectively, and there's been too long a delay since the signing of the agreement to the point we're in now. But once again, where we are now, we have the signs of this movement which will lead to the transitional government now taking place. We need to hold on to that, fully support it, and then really, as the international community, as the friends of South Sudan, work out ways of really supporting the TGNU. But I think it is our duty to send clear messages about what we see as the priorities, what we see as the areas where we most want to support. So it's a process led by South Sudanese leaders. That's vital. But there will need, over the implementation period, there'll need to be a lot of discussion and a lot of assistance.
Yes. Apart from the offer to transport the opposition here and also help in other ways, I just want you to tell us, what are you doing to convince the both government and the opposition that the implementation of the peace agreement must be, really expedited?
I think a lot of that is a conversation. It's speaking directly. It's trying to find a language between us, which is a language of clarity, which is a language which those who are going to be in the TGNU feel comfortable with, and which actually helps them be focused. Because this is not easy. I mean, to take the economy, which will be one of the major issues which will face the transitional government, there will need early on to be a discussion and a consensus around the table on the urgent measures which need taking. Now, we will help with that as best we can. We will help by messaging ourselves, and we are talking. So there's a part of this is about contacts and contacts we have with all parties. In terms of actual assistance, we, as the Troika, as the United Kingdom, we certainly will be looking at ways in which we can help making offers to areas, possibly quite specialist areas, which actually can assist the agreement itself. So we're helping JMEC. We're certainly helping the monitoring organization, CTSAM. We are looking at how we do that so that we can help with expertise, with a little bit of finance, but to make the peace agreement, the mechanism of the peace agreement, really work well. But I think, I mean, the main thing I want to say is that our number one priority all through this process is the people of South Sudan. When we look at all our assistance to South Sudan, almost all our assistance is direct to the people of South Sudan. On the humanitarian side, the huge need to help people facing famine in some parts of the country and facing acute food shortages, probably up to 30% of the country facing acute food shortage. These are figures which must not be denied, but in press conferences they are figures which actually come from all the expert institutions. They need to be acknowledged. And we are one of the main contributors to that. But we also, and throughout the conflict, we've kept going with some of our development programs. We're particularly proud of our education program, our health program. We're working in some areas of governance in conflict areas. We're working on projects to prevent sexual violence. We've kept going with those projects, and we will keep going with these projects.
Yes,
but we increasingly will be looking for partnership with the transitional government as it takes over.
Ambassador, as you talk to these leaders from both sides, you didn't mention it's more of conversation. Do you see the political will really in the implementation of this peace agreement, like the two leaders? Do they have the political will to fully implement the peace agreement as it is?
We believe in their commitment. We believe in their commitment, which came from when they signed. And we trust in that. We also see quite clearly that this is difficult. It is difficult to come together. And we must all support that. And that, of course, is not just about the leaders themselves. It is about their supporters. So yes, we do. We both must believe, because we must believe in the peace agreement, that it's the best way of doing things. But we must work at it as well. And trust is something which can't be created by an agreement itself. It has to be lived. I think we all believe that will be easier when the leaders are all here and when we have this transitional government, that some of the problems and the worries can be sorted out by that usual traditional democratic process of arguing. Arguing rather than using a megaphone and rather than being in different places and misunderstanding you is clearly better. So building the means for that trust to be built is really important. And it will need lots of good people.
Yes. And as outsiders, do you see, as there are also peace spoilers, do you see there are peace spoilers in this process of the implementation?
There's lots of talk about this. Since I started dealing with this subject just after the conflict, and then since I've had the privilege to be here over the last year, I keep on hearing the word spoilers, and I'm never quite sure. I think sometimes that perhaps it's something to do with human nature. When people are confronted with a huge problem, they find it easier to cause a small difficulty. Sometimes some problems are very, very big to solve. So perhaps there are many people who will be thinking small and not having a high level of ambition. And sometimes I think that does degrade decision-making. There may be people out there who want something completely different. Highly likely, I think, that would be something different for themselves and for their own advantage. There are people like that in all societies, and the purpose of proper political leadership is to make sure that the bridge builders, the uniters, the peacemakers are the people who remain in power and set the pace, set the example. So we mustn't be put off by that, and I think it's just as an observation from outside, I don't think the country would be fair on itself to assume that there is this group which is constantly, as a group, working against the interests of the people of South Sudan.
Before we just talk about the economy briefly, could the TROIKA have done more to speed up the implementation of the peace agreement, or should it play now a bigger role?
Well, Sabit, I think we'll probably sit in conferences for the next few years on this, when we look backwards and we all ask ourselves, what could we have done differently to make things go more quickly? I wonder. I think one of the things that has been strong from the outside has been the degree of consensus, which is still there with the region, with the continent, with the international community. We all fundamentally want the same thing. We want a successful South Sudan. Things weren't like that 20 years ago in this part of the world with the Cold War. It was not an achievable thing. So that's the positive. Whether all the details and the ordering of the peace agreement could have been done differently, well, possibly. But I think fundamentally the decision taken that this has to be sorted out by South Sudanese people, by the leaders of South Sudan, however difficult that might appear, I think on balance is the right decision. We don't live in a world where the international community can come along and impose, because that word has been used a lot.
Sure.
But in the end, what has been imposed has been the responsibility on the South Sudanese leaders to do their job.
Yes, I just want you to clarify that as well. Have the international community in any way impose something to South Sudan, like the peace?
I hope that we have made it clear to the leaders of South Sudan that they must do this. Is that imposition? Yes, it is, perhaps. if you're referring to the what if you don't side of things, it's absolutely clear that there has been a threat of restrictive measures being taken against individuals. It's what we call sanctions, not sanctions against South Sudan. Not sanctions against South Sudan. Unthinkable. That's the last thing we would want to do. Measures against individuals who block or derail the peace agreement. It's a very specific thing. Now, there have been some named individuals who were responsible for certain military events quite early on in the process. Mm-hmm. And that possibility, that threat, is still there and is renewable and renewed. Of course, it in itself isn't a solution, but it, I think, has been a way of making clear that the international community, and this is a 15-0 vote in the UN Security Council, in passing that measure in 2014, that is still there and it is still a possibility. But we hope for the positive, and we are encouraged that the leaders have signed the agreement. And their signatures are at the bottom. They have committed to it. We all understand it is a process. There's nervousness. It needs a lot of support, and it needs a lot of daylight. Mm-hmm. Thrown on it.
Yes, Ambassador, let's look briefly at the economy of the country right now. Some people I have interviewed in this show have actually described South Sudan as an economic wasteland. Is it fair assessment on the current economic situation in the country?
There are clearly very, very grave short-term economic difficulties and longer-term challenges as well. The oil price drop has been completely outside the control of South Sudan or any other country, and that has been very unfortunate. Mm-hmm. Some of the crisis quite clearly has been man-made with the management of the economy over the last few years, and I think all the leaders acknowledge that. There are sources of income, and there is economic activity. It isn't just oil, but clearly there are big challenges. So I think it's very important not to look at South Sudan as though it's some business and we can somehow, there's an option of it not working and then the business is closed. This is not. Mm-hmm. It's a country. It's a people. It's a people with future, with young people, many, many brilliant people here who have great futures in front of them. So the question is how does the country step up? How does it improve? And how does the outside help as well? Now, that is something we're going to need to look at really intensively once we have the transitional government. Mm-hmm. Because until we have the transitional government, we as the outside community cannot deal with a government which is presiding over a pre-peace country. We can deal with it. Of course, we deal very well with the existing government. But in terms of the economy, in terms of actually coming to agreements, we all need the transitional government to be set up. So it'll be a process. It will need to build confidence. There will need to be new economic policies on both revenue and expenditure. It is clearly a difficult situation at the moment. The salaries of public officials and other areas are being badly hit. But there is spending which still is going on in some areas, which needs to be brought under control. There is available help from outside globally, from global expertise to actually help with the design of those policies. So we must all work really hard on it.
Mm-hmm. So in other words, you're just saying before the formation of transitional government of national unity, let's say the international communities, the outsiders, will not help South Sudan financially, let's say in donations or something like that. They'll not help the government unless there is a government of national unity.
Yes, effectively. We always hope we can help. We've been talking intensively to the current government and over the last few months, but it has been the case over that time that there is no major budgetary assistance which we can give to the country. Mm-hmm. And so even with a transitional government, We will need an intensive discussion with the IMF. There was an IMF mission which was out here, as you're aware, in February. It will return to finish off its work once the transitional government is up and running, and that might lead to a process of some sort. For us as donors, we have our criteria for giving assistance to South Sudan, which we cannot, of course, look at. But this has to be handled very carefully. There isn't a single moment where suddenly there are huge funds flowing into the country.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Now, just finally, before we close this interview, Ambassador, you Troika has been in the forefront, of course, of bringing the security for... Just to make it very clear, you did mention there's been a lot of progress. Now, like, how long are we talking about here? Like, possibly for the IO to be here and for Dr. Yes, Riek to be yes, here and for the yes. government of national unity to be formed?
We have been talking about the end of this month for return, for formation of the transitional government. That's what we have been saying. There's been some slippage in some days, but we're talking about quite short term. I'm simply not qualified to say exactly when, but we certainly hope the process will start shortly of bringing the troops back to Juba, and that should start the process of return. And we look forward to the return of Dr. Riek. Then the arrangements for the formation of the transitional government of national unity have to be, of course, organized by them with our support. But I won't give you an exact day because I guess an exact day because I'll lose my bet. But we are hopeful that this will happen. If not by the end of the month, it'll be shortly after.
All right. Now, Ambassador, just on a lighter note, South Sudan has been ranked low on the happiness index. What could really make South Sudanese a happy, people?
Well, I think you are a happy people fundamentally. You're a wonderful people and a hopeful people. And despite all the terrible things that have happened, that is visible. What will make everyone happy will be when there's something they really can call peace. Mm-hmm. It's been very confusing for people because they've seen a lot of process and a lot of words, but some message of unity which can get out a message that this is over. Mm-hmm. And of course everyone will still have problems in their daily lives and in the way that we all do. There are huge challenges facing the country and the huge challenges facing people across the country in terms of food and all those things. But a really clear moment of peace, perhaps something around the establishment of the TGNU is a way of conveying that message. The sort of celebration we want is something which is a shared celebration. It's not something which is staged or is put on around some particular artificial event, but something which clearly demonstrates that the whole range of political people and the groups in this country are in general agreement. I think that happiness, I think success by the football team is very, very important. And I think we all need to get in behind your country as a sporting nation. You're spending too much time following our football teams in the UK.
The English Premier League and the rest. Ambassador, thank you so much for coming to our studios. We really do appreciate it. In less than a minute, maybe your final remarks.
Well, thank you very much. And I would just say to your listeners, it's a real privilege, as always, to be on Radio Maria. And I do want to try to give you a feeling of our hope and our expectation for the next few weeks here, that we really do think the setting up of this transitional government is important. We will do what we can to support it.